sort of interesting how you sometimes think you know somebody really well and you get along, but you think back and, you know, you never worked together, don't really know each other that well. For me, Trey Wingo is one of those guys. I knew of him. He was in St. Louis. I was working in other markets, but it was my hometown, so I kept tabs on what was happening around here. And Trey was at KSDK Channel 5 in St. Louis from 1991 to 1997. And I moved back home in the summer of 97. And we would talk and visit a bit out in the field as reporters, maybe at Rams Park, maybe at a Cardinal game. And I just felt like we knew each other pretty well. And I'd see him at Canton over the years, covering different Rams players going into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And we always seemed to get along well, but we really didn't know each other for a very long stretch here in St. Louis. But wanted to talk to him because he had a great run at ESPN. And wanted to talk about the early days. For those who don't remember, ESPN News was sort of like AAA. They would hire these anchors. And if you did well at ESPN News, well, then they'd bump you over to ESPN. And I'm sure it had to be a little bit cutthroat. And for Trey, he got those reps over at ESPN. All of a sudden, he became sort of their NFL guy. NFL Live, NFL Primetime, hosting the draft, hosting the coverage from the Pro Football Hall of Fame every summer. We talk a little bit about the career at ESPN. First time he ran into Chris Berman, which had to be sort of surreal as all the kids that we were growing up watching ESPN. And for Trey, it happened in the bathroom in Bristol, Connecticut. Former high school classmate of Steve Young's, or at least same high school. I think they were a year apart. I never knew that. Believe it or not, we do a little research on the Kilcoyne Conversation. So Trey Wingo, formerly of ESPN, and that's part of the topic as well. What happened at the end? He was doing radio, Wingo and Golic, replacing the Mike and Mike show that had been on for like two decades. And maybe Trey was a little too honest, not wanting to do morning radio. He talks about that, what goes into doing that job on a national level. Fun ESPN stories, also what's next, sort of a deep tease that he's got a lot of things potentially coming down the road. And his time in St. Louis was not a glorious sports time. Certainly the Blues and Brett Hull were the story. The Cardinals were down at that stretch, although La Russa came here right at the end of Trey's time in St. Louis, but baseball Cardinals weren't very good. Football Cardinals had left. Trey covered some of those expansion meetings when they didn't get the Stallions and was here for the beginning of the football Rams. And, you know, as we discussed, they weren't very good. He says St. Louis fans should thank him for leaving because once he left, things picked up for not only the Rams, but the baseball Cardinals and I guess eventually with the Blues winning a Stanley Cup. So Trey Wingo's our guest, the Kilcoyne Conversation. Make sure you subscribe. And everybody tells you that. We just kind of throw that line away. Hey, subscribe. Hey, subscribe. But it is helpful to get the numbers up. So if you can, on Spotify or iTunes, wherever it is, make sure you click, review, give us a review or two. If there's a favorite guest or segment that we've done lately, make sure you mention that. And all of the segments are posted at scoopswithdannymac.com. Great content on the web. The Cardinal broadcaster, Dan McLaughlin, has the website scoopswithdannymac.com. So subscribe, check it out. Encourage you to check out all the great material that Dan has on his site. The Kilcoyne Conversation is brought to you by Triad Bank. That's a St. Louis-based bank. 2005 is when it all started in St. Louis. St. Louis-based bank, and because they are based here, they can get things done for you. If you're a business owner, you know what it's like to go to a bank and they say, well, we'll check in with everybody. Got to go to L.A. Got to go to New York. It's not the case with Triad Bank. Excuse me. Stop by and see them in Frontenac on Clayton Road. Easy to get to. Highway 40 in Lindbergh. Take that exit. Go a little bit west on Clayton and you will see it. Triad Bank. Or on the web, it's triadbanking.com. Also, Marita Villa Senior Living, located at the corner of Clayton and Weidman Road. Take that virtual tour. That's the easiest thing to do. Marie Davila, that's M-A-R-I-D-E-V-I-L-L-A, maridavilla.com. Assisted living, villa estates, whatever type of arrangement you're looking for, they've got it. Beautiful campus in West County, Marie Davila Senior Living. And Appliance Discounters, who likes to remind you, don't get the runaround. You know what it is. You go to the appliance store and they say, all right, what are you looking for? Yeah, give us a couple of months. We'll get it to you. How about a couple of days? That's what they do at Appliance Discounters because they have the giant warehouse in downtown St. Louis, so they have inventory. Those GE products are available. And when you want the appliance, you really don't want to wait around. Make sure you go to Appliance Discounters. Get the great General Electric products and have them delivered quickly to you. That's what they're all about. They know there are enough headaches out there these days. Been a lot of headaches for over a year. Simplify with Appliance Discounters. TheAppliancedIscounters.com or any of their area showrooms. It's real simple. Their savings are your savings. All right, let's get to it. The conversation this week with Trey Wingo.
Well, Trey, I thought I knew a lot about you, but and this is probably a well-known fact, but did I miss the fact that you and Steve Young went to high school together? Is this like Captain Obvious? Does everyone know this?
I don't know if everyone knows it, but I always like to say Steve and I went to the same building, but we were in different schools. Like Steve, you know, was the captain of everything and all this kind of stuff. And he was a year ahead of me. And I was not captain everything in high school. So like we were in the same building, but we went to different schools. That's the best way to describe it.
How about the first time you saw him in Bristol? Did you go up to him and say, hey, you remember me? I mean, what was that?
It gets better. It goes back to St. Louis when the Rams were playing at Busch Stadium. Now, and they had those. When did you get to St. Louis? I can't remember.
So it's funny. I got here in July of 97, and I got to know you a little bit, and then you broke my heart and left like months later. Didn't you leave in like
fall? Yeah, November of 97. Yeah, November of 97. So anyway, this was the first year they were there, and it was 1995, and the 49ers were coming to play. And we're playing at Busch Stadium. And my wife is also from Greenwich, went to high school together. And she and Steve were in the same class. They were a year ahead of me. So, and actually, Jeff Gordon wrote about this in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch back in the day. It was pretty funny. So she's on the field, and you know Steve is not playing because he's injured. And Elvis Gerback played in that game where Ken Norton, I think, had two pick sixes, and they just destroyed the Rams. But, you know, she waves up to Steve and Steve's like, oh, Janice, how are you? Comes down, gives her a hug and all this kind of stuff. I walk up like 10 minutes later. I'm like, hey, Steve, Trey Wingo went to high school. It's like, yeah, I don't know who you are. It's like, cool. Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Appreciate it. So I had to remind him, actually, the first time I had a live shot with him, it was Super Bowl 36 in New Orleans. I was like, you know, we went to high school together. He's like, get out of here. So, yeah, like I said, we were in the same building, but we were in different orbits.
But how great is that for your wife? Because her whole life is probably like, oh, are you married to Trey? Or, oh, your husband, he knows my husband. Like, it's that good for her to have that moment.
Well, look, she should have all the moments, for lack of a better term. I mean, she went to Cornell. I did not. She was a lifeguard. I was not. She was the athlete. I was not. So, yeah. But it gets even better because we're getting off on a tangent here, but you need to understand the power couple at my high school was Steve Young, who went on to, of course, be Mr. BYU and became at that time the $40 million quarterback for the USFL before going on to fame and glory in the Hall of Fame with the 49ers. He dated a girl in the early 80s. Her name is Christy Fitchner. Now, that name probably means nothing to you, but in 1986, Christy Fitchner beat out, among other finalists, Halle Berry to wear the crown of Miss USA and went on to be runner-up Miss Universe that year. So the power couple in my high school was future Hall of Fame quarterback Steve Young and former Miss USA runner-up Miss Universe Christy Fitchner. The rest of us never had a chance.
What did Rod Stewart say? Some guys have all the luck, right?
Yeah, it was. I like to remind Steve of that every once in a while because I knew where she lived.
I have always said this to Ozzie Smith. He went to high school with Eddie Murray. So they go to the reunion and it's like, hey, what's up, everybody? I'm a Hall of Fame baseball player. Like, yeah, that guy over there is too.
It's, yeah. Isn't Eddie Murray the biggest switch hitter in the Hall of Fame, if I'm not mistaken? Has the most hits for any switch hitter in the Hall of Fame?
Which probably, again, Ozzie being a switch hitter is like, okay, he's got me on that too. Can we have a separate reunion? When you were here, though, it was kind of a dead era, wasn't it? Because there was no NFL for the first handful of years. And the Cardinals were bad during that. You left just as sort of the Cardinals were getting good. But I guess what's most memorable there, was it kind of Hull and the Blues?
Yeah, without question. You know, it was the Hull and Oates era. And, you know, Adam got traded while we were there. I mean, I always tell people in St. Louis, hey, you're welcome for me leaving, because that's when stuff really good started to happen. You know, like the year after I left, I think the Blues won the President's Trophy for the most points in the NHL. You know, the Cardinals started winning again, although they did go to the NLCS that year in 96 against the Braves. I think we're up 3-1 and gagged it away, if I'm not mistaken. And then the Rams came and they were terrible. But, you know, right after I left, the Greatest Show on Turf started going. So you're welcome. I left and things got better.
With a name Trey Wingo. And by the way, are there any kids named Trey that are not the third? Is it possible?
It's possible, but it would be dumb. Like, I mean, I don't know why you would go down that road otherwise. Like, my whole life, as you know, my full name is Hal Chapman Wingo III, which is just A, obnoxious, and B, awful. And, like, the first day of school was always the worst. Is there a Hal Chapman Wingo III here? Yes, that's me, but I go by Trey. What? It's a long story. I always wanted to be a Joe or a Jim or a Martin, just to make it easier for everybody.
No, I get a lot of Miltons and Marvins. It's not that hard a name, but I get people hammer that. I'm just saying that with that name, Trey Wingo, it feels like an extra in Brockmeyer. Like, you should have been a sports kid. That name, you were destined. When did you decide this was your path?
Well, you know, in high school, we started this little show, and we started doing like weekly updates from the old AV department. And we broadcast football games and basketball games, in which Steve starred in all of them. And so that's when I thought I wanted to do it. And then I went to college, and I took a far 90 degree or even 180 turn. And the college years were much more social than anything else for me, which probably, you know, didn't help me. But then I graduated from college. I was like, I don't want to do this. This sucks. Working nights and weekends, that's no fun. So I got an office job in Washington, D.C. as an account executive for a PR firm called Rogers & Cowan. And my boss at the time was a woman named Mabel H. Muffy Brandon. She was the former press secretary for Nancy Reagan. And I would find myself like trying to do PR, but every day I would lock myself in my office and just read all the sports articles I could. So I was like, screw this. I'm going to try this anyway. And moved back in my parents' basement, got a job as a page at NBC, and then sent out a tape, and that's how it started.
And when you went to ESPN, I mean, they were a monster. But at the time, wasn't ESPN News sort of like, I won't say AAA, that's not fair. It was ESPN. But like, if you did well there, then you got to move over to the big set, right? And was everybody there kind of looking around like, hey, I'm going to get to the big leagues?
Well, that was sort of the plan. But I mean, what was really weird for me, I had been in St. Louis less than a year, and I'd come back from doing some story on a local high school track star at, I don't know, Vianney High or something like that. And this is in August of 92, and I'd gotten there in November of 91. And I had this was before the internet and voicemail, kids. There were things that existed before the internet and cell phones. And I had a little one of those sticky notes on my those pink notepads, you know, that say, hey, so-and-so call the message pad. And it said, please call Al Jaffe, area code 203. Well, I knew 203 was Connecticut. So I'm like, who the hell is calling me from Connecticut? And then I realized, holy bleep, that's Al Jaffe. He's the talent coordinator for ESPN. I had not sent them a tape. Someone else had sent them a tape of me. I didn't even have an agent at that point. And they're like, yeah, we're launching this thing called ESPN2. And we'd like to talk to you about, coming up and auditioning. I'm like, fantastic. And he goes, but, you know, are you under contract? I'm like, yeah, I'm under contract. He goes, well, we need your station to sign off on it, because otherwise tortious interference, blah, 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 blah. So I'm like, that won't be a problem. I mean, I'm not even the weekend guy here. I'm the third guy in the rotation here. So I'm just, you know, the fill-in dude. So it shouldn't be an issue. And they would not let me go. KSTK shot that down. It's like, well, if we do it for you, we'd have to do it for everybody, which is total crap. And, it wasn't like everyone else is getting an offer to go to a national cable station. So I was denied entry in 1992. And before I finally got up there when ESPN News started in 1997. And I'll never forget, because they did vacation requests by priority, like by seniority on the list. And every year, when that bleeping list came out, I would look at where I would have been on the vacation priority list if I'd gotten there in 92 instead of 97. I'm like, son of a, I would have had the pick of whatever I wanted if I had been here in 1992 instead of 1997. Y'all take that 3-day swing late October, if that's okay. It did change things dramatically.
And not to be the one-upper, although I guess all sports guys are one-uppers. My favorite, and it doesn't one-up that, but my favorite pink slip where while you were out, which kids, again, won't understand. Yeah. I'm working in Madison, Wisconsin, and I come in on a Monday, and there's a pink note on my desk, and it says, while you were out, Tom Farley called. And I'm like, and it says, Chris's dad. I'm like, holy shit, Chris Farley's dad called me. And wow. I call him back, and they, because they were from Madison, the Farley family.
Yeah, yeah.
And this guy answers the phone, and I'm telling you, he's the down by the river guy. He's like, Martin, how the hell are you doing? It's Tom, Chris's dad. And I'm like, yeah, oh my God, great, great to hear. What's up? And like, he said, well, the weekend, you guys showed a clip, because Chris got like an honorary degree at Marquette or something. And the weekend, I was the weekend sports guy. And the last story, I'd sit out there with the news anchor and yuck it up, was a clip of him getting this degree. And his dad goes, we're watching the news, and there you guys are. And then they show the video. I'm like, hold on. Chris Farley is sitting here watching WISC Channel 3 Weekend News. and the dad wanted a clip because it was such a distinguished moment for Chris, who wasn't always distinguished.
Right.
And I said, you know, Chris is older than me. I said, but there was a picture of him at the Avalanche Bar I'll never forget. And his dad cuts me off and he goes, oh, for God's sakes, was he wearing any pants in the picture? And I'm like, yeah. And could not, and I'll never get out of my head that was 100%. The down by the river guy. All right, but back to you, which is what this is about. So you go to ESPN and you walk in the door. Do you see Chris Berman or Dan Patrick in the hallway or at the cafeteria? And now you're on the team, but they don't know you. How was it intimidating at first?
Well, sure. I mean, Chris Berman was one of the reasons I wanted to get into the business. And I'd met him a couple of times at Busch Stadium when he was down calling, Cardinal games, or I think they shot some commercials down there with him. So like one of my first days in, I think it was the first week, and you'll appreciate this. I'm in the men's bathroom and Boomer comes in and I'm like, Chris, you don't remember me. I'm Trey Wingo. I'm new here from St. Louis. And he goes, you were the guy that told me about the Cheddar Smokies. Great job. Like, yeah, because one time at the old press box at Busch Stadium, he was in line and said, man, you got to try the Cheddar Smokies. And for anybody that hasn't been to the press box at Busch Stadium, those are the hot dogs filled with cheese. They're freaking great. Cheddar Smokies. He remembered that I had told him about the Cheddar Smokies at Busch Stadium in the media dining room. And I thought that was the coolest thing in the world.
So when did you know there, hey, I'm going to get a chance here at some bigger reps, or hey, they like me?
Well, they never like to tell you they like you. Let me be 100% clear about that. They prefer the opposite way. We don't like you at all. You're lucky to be here. And you just have to sort of deal with that. But, you know, the big thing then was, you know, guys on ESPN's when they got an opportunity to do the 1 a.m. Sports Center on Friday or Saturday, which was the late show then, which is now done in Los Angeles with the studios there. But that was the show that, you wait until all the highlights were done. And then after you do a couple of those, they get you on some 1 a.m. shows during the week. And those were the shows that used to go on at 1 a.m. And they would be on the air constantly from 1 a.m. until 1 p.m. the next day. So you would be on the entire time. And, when you started getting a couple of those, that's when you knew, all right, I must be doing something right. And then, every month the schedule would come out and that you'd see where you are. And that was a big deal. And then I started noticing that I was getting some Baseball Tonight's, it's just so how crazy and how much the industry has changed. You know, Baseball Tonight is barely on anymore. There were two-hour Baseball Tonight's, one at 10 to 11 before the 11 o'clock Sports Center. And then one from 12 to 1 before the 1 a.m. Sports Center. And somebody pulled me aside and said, hey, just so you know, they're putting you on Baseball Tonight. That means they like you. They won't tell you that, but that means they like you because, things are going well. And that's a show that everybody watches. So when those things started popping up, that's when I was like, all right, I guess this is going all right.
And then you became the NFL guy for a long time. I'd see a Canton every time a Rams player would go into the hall. You were holding court up there. That had to be kind of surreal, even just to be in Canton. And looking around and all these old timers and their Blazers, they all know who you are. And when did you become sort of cemented as the NFL guy?
Well, listen, they put me on the 6 o'clock Sports Center for 2 years. And then they put me on NBA Tonight for a year. And I went to them and said, look, I appreciate this, but I didn't come here to be the NBA Tonight guy. That's not what I want to do. I'd really like to do something else. And they started NFL Live in 2003. And it was NFL Tonight before that with Mark Malone, the brawny paper towel guy. And so they said, we want you to host NFL Live. And that was in 2003. And everybody has a favorite sport, right? We all cover sports and we all like sports, but there's always one sport we like more than anything else. And my sport is football. I've always loved football, specifically the NFL over college football. So to me, that was the greatest job ever. Like I worked when NFL Live started, it was on Tuesday through Saturday, a half hour show on ESPN2. The only 5 days of the week at that point where there were no football games. And we had a floating schedule. Like some days we'd be on at 6:30 at night. Some days we'd be on at 7:30. They just sort of fit us in. Some Tuesday afternoons or Saturday afternoons, we'd be on at 3:30 in the afternoon. And so we parlayed that into a Monday through Friday hour-long gig, 4 to 5 on ESPN. And when I tell you that was the greatest job of all time, for me, that was the greatest job of all time. I mean, the guys that I worked with on NFL Live, Mark Schlereth, Darren Woodson, Teddy Bruschi, Herm Edwards, Ryan Clark, Damian Woody. We're talking about guys that had multiple Super Bowl rings and knew what it took to win championships. And we were very proud of what that show was and what it became. I mean, we were an afterthought and we made it into must-see TV. And from that, I got to do NFL primetime for 12 years and obviously the draft. So that was, if someone says to me, what was the most fun you had during your 23 years at ESPN? Without question, it was doing NFL Live with that crew all the time because they were great. And we all hit it off, and Merrill Hodge and Timmy Hasselbeck and Ron Jaworski. I mean, those guys are still my friends. Like I still do. I go play golf with Herm all the time. And, you know, Stink and I are best friends to this day. Teddy comes down and plays golf with me here. I go up to his place. Like those friendships, like there are three kinds of people you work with, right? They're your coworkers, they're your friends, and they're your boys. And all those guys on NFL Live, they were my boys. And that was the most fun I've ever had, and I'm not sure anything will ever top it.
And because of that massive platform, did you have moments, whether you were back in St. Louis or you're in Chicago, where somebody famous, this is like a Cusumano question, right? Somebody famous says, hey, you're, and I think, isn't there a famous elevator story? I'm going to probably get
No. There's a bunch of those, but I'll tell the elevator story, then we'll get into some other stuff. Like, it was the NBA All-Star Game in Atlanta. It was 2000, February 2003, and Stuart Scott said, hey, I'm having lunch with somebody. Come down to the hotel lunchroom. I'm like, okay, sure. And I walk in, and Stuart's sitting there with Tiger Woods. And, you know, some people may know that I consider Tiger the most dominant athlete ever in the history of all sports, and I will die on that hill what he's able to do in a sport that's you can't dominate it, and he did it for so long. So I'm kind of freaking out. And so I kind of just sit down casually trying not to pretend like I'm freaking out. And Tiger goes, hey, Trey. I'm like, oh, hey, Tiger, what's up? You know, and just sort of sit down for a few minutes. And then he has to leave and then Stuart leaves. So then I'm like freaking out that, you know, A, I sat down and had lunch with Tiger and he knew who I was. So I run to the elevator bank and I have my old cell phone out and I'm beginning to call my dad. And I'm calling my dad and the elevator door is open and, you know, I'm buried in my phone. So I start walking into the elevator before people are walking out of the elevator. And I slam into this giant human being and he looks at me and goes, Wingo, watch where you're going. I'm like, oh, sorry, Michael, my bad. That's on me. So in about a 10 minute stand, we went from Tiger knowing who I am to Michael Jordan saying, Wingo, watch where you're going. And then when I finally got to the hotel, I really called my dad and we had a good time with that one.
Oh, that is very cool. You know, and I want your life because I feel like there might be a maker's mark at night. There's probably a beautiful golf course in the morning. And this is during your ESPN days, your post ESPN days. I feel like there's a decent chance I'll find you golfing. Is that fair?
Yeah, I'm looking at the fairway right there, even as we speak. Tee time at 2:00 this afternoon, my friend. So yeah, I love golf. Golf is the ultimate challenge to me because boring golf is the best golf, but you never really feel that well when you're playing well. You know what I mean? You're always waiting. Like, I don't know, like what's your handicap?
Oh, okay. Yeah. You would, I mean, I honestly would probably shoot 95, 98, you know?
Okay. So. See, I'm the worst. I'm like a 9 because that means I think I'm really good, but I'm really not. So every time you're out there, you're just waiting for the wheels to fall off. But that's the allure of the sport to me. Like I can play 3 holes in a row. Like the other day I birdied 3 holes, 3 or 4 holes. And I still didn't break 80. You know, it's just that you're just waiting for that collapse all the time. And it's such a mental challenge. And that's why what happened with Phil yesterday was just absolutely ridiculous, winning the PGA. I don't know when this is airing. So we're doing this on Monday morning after the final round of the PGA Championship Sunday. But that's the beauty and the allure of the sport. Like you can never control it. You can just hold on for a little bit and eventually it'll all go away.
Well, and you had a great tweet about the Phil, the magnitude or the historical context.
Yeah.
Because explain that to folks, because I think you're just trying to put it into a box. You're like, this is different.
Yeah. Look, people will always look at Jack's win at the 86 Masters as incredible because he hadn't won since 1980 when he won the major, the U.S. Open at Baltusrol. And he came and shot a 30 or 31 on the back nine and came back and won it. And it was magic. It was. And then obviously what Tiger did in 2019 from coming back from the back surgeries and, you know, his life falling apart, finally winning that elusive 15th major, 11 years after his previous one? That was very emotional. But if we're being honest with ourselves, like the Masters is a limited field event. And if you played there enough, and obviously guys like Jack and Tiger and everybody that gets an invite plays there at least once a year, and they play a ton. You like experience helps you at Augusta. There's no question about it. Like Tiger shot on 16 at 2019, when he essentially won the tournament by knocking it close. It was the traditional Sunday pin. He hit it up high to the right, just on the hill to trickle it down. Like, you know how to do that if you've played there a million times. Phil Mickelson just won a major at almost 51 years old, the oldest major winner ever, on the longest golf course ever for a major, at a course that you don't play once every 10 years. Like, the last time they had a major there was 2012 when Rory won it. So you're not going to the Ocean course every year and you get a feel for the place. It was a beast. And some of the best players in the world, Brooks Koepka, who was trying to win his third PGA in his last four outings, which is ridiculous. Phil Mickelson stood and withstood all of that. To me, that was much more difficult. I'm not saying it was more impressive. I'm not saying it was more magical or emotional. Jack was magical. Tiger ripped at your heartstrings. But for what Phil was able to do, and basically he had the lead essentially the entire way, and for him to bury that weight on his shoulders at the age of 50, like on the 16th hole Sunday, Brooks was his last chance to really put pressure on him, playing next to Phil, was to maybe eagle 16. He steps up and rips a 361-yard drive. So what does Phil do at the age of 50? He hits one 5 yards past him, 366 yards, which was the longest drive on 16. For him to do that at his age on that course and withstand the deepest field in the majors, every year the PGA has the deepest field, it's a harder accomplishment. I'm not saying people will look at it the same way as Jack or Tiger, because Phil is not Jack or Tiger. He's you know, he only has six majors. Jack has 18. Tiger has 15. But what he was able to do, that was harder. It was harder, and I don't think it's debatable.
You seem, and I won't say energizer, but when you left ESPN, I think a lot of people think, well, there could be bitterness. He could be mad about how it ended. But I haven't sensed that. I've read some of the stuff. You talked to Richard. Is it Deitch or Deitch? I've had him on the radio.
Deitch.
And talked to him about it and maybe what led to it or whatever. How was it hard to walk away and not be mad?
Well, there always will be a little resentment for how it was handled. But, you know, I knew that I couldn't do that radio show anymore. And it was nothing against Golic, and it was nothing against any of the people I work with. We still talk all the time. I'm a night owl by nature. They asked me. I didn't come to them. They came to me and said, we would like you to do this because Mike Greenberg, we have other things. We're going to move him on. We would like you to do this. And I said, okay, I'll try. And, you know, it was a 3-year contract. And I knew within the first week that it wasn't for me. But, you know, I was going to go through it. So about halfway through the deal, my agent went to them and said, look, you asked him to do this and he did it, but I don't think he wants to do it long term. And for some reason, they took great offense to that. And I'll tell you a funny story. When I was considering the job, like, I almost didn't take it. Because, like I said, I loved NFL Live. I love doing primetime. I love doing the draft. I love going to Canton. That's my jam outside of golf. And we did, you know, the U.S. Open and Open Championship and all that kind of stuff. And I was able to squeeze that in my schedule. Wimbledon, U.S. Open tennis. It was great. Someone pulled me aside and said, look, if they offer this to you and you don't take it, they'll hold it against you the next time around. And sure enough, that happened to be the case. So I guess I would say to you, I took that job for the right reasons and I left it for the right reasons because it just wasn't for me and I didn't want to fake it. I hated pretending like I'd seen all the things the night before because you can't. You can't get up at 3:15 every morning and watch every game at night because then you're a zombie. And that's just, I didn't want to live that way. I didn't want to be dishonest with the listeners and the viewers. And I'm not saying that it's wrong that other people can do that. If they can, good for them. I couldn't. So I left it. I left it for the right reasons, and it turned out to be the greatest thing in the world because this has been really fun with the things that I've been able to do now. Working with the PGA Tour, I went to Fox and did some stuff with them, and I think I can't say anything yet, but there are things there that are coming. I'm working with a little company called Pro Football Network here where I do some digital stuff for them. The podcast, Half Forgotten History, Trey Wingo presents on YouTube, and you can get it on Apple, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get your Luminary, wherever you get your podcast. That has been amazing. Our sponsors have been incredible. You know, like you said, Maker's Mark, Mercedes, US Bank, Visa, DraftKings. It's fun to do a lot of different things for a lot of different people, and it's really been energizing.
And you kind of own your own schedule, don't you?
Yeah.
And your Half Forgotten History, I believe by definition, is all these conversations that take place off air. Or historically, it would be when the interview's over, when the segment's over. You know, we did Marshall Fox Sunday Night TV show. We'd go to the commercial break, and he'd say, well, the reason that didn't work. I'm like, say that on the air, please.
Yeah. And that's exactly right. Like, one of the greatest stories, and we got this with Eli Manning when we had Eli and Archie on, like his rookie year – Tim Hasselbeck told me the story because he was the third quarterback when they had Kurt Warner, Eli, and Tim in 2004. And there was a game after they had made the switch from Kurt to Eli where they were playing, I can't remember who it was, but their starting left tackle, Luke Pettigrew, broke his leg in that game. And so their backup left tackle was a guy named Bob Whitfield, who was a really good player in his time. He was a number one pick out of, I think, Stanford. But he got in the game and he was terrible. I mean, like he was a swinging gate at left tackle. And I think Eli was sacked like five times after that. And it was a swinging gate. He was hit a dozen more. And so that next week they had a players only meeting and Bob Whitfield stands up in the players only meeting and said, "Hey man, that loss was on me. Luke never gets hurt. So I didn't go to bed Saturday night. I was out partying with some girls and doing some stuff I shouldn't have done. So that's on me. I'm sorry, man." And Eli deadpan turned to Tim Hasselbeck and said, "Yeah, and I'm the bust." You know, and we got to tell that story. And Eli's like, "That's when I learned when not everybody prepared the way I was preparing," you know? So those kind of stories that we had, like you said, conversations between the break or out to dinner at a Super Bowl or at the Hall of Fame where we're having a cocktail, where we can start to do that again now. Those things never made air for whatever reason. And that's the whole point, to tell the behind the scenes stories that people don't know, that I know and you know, and maybe a few other people know, that they need to know. And that's been the fun part about it.
I'd say Bob Whitfield, that sounds like the original Max McGee, right? The night before the bowl, out partying.
Although it worked out better for Max McGee than it did for Bob Whitfield. Trust me on that one.
So is there any hesitation, though, because the world has changed and people are uptight and looking to just hop on people for anything they say? That's the only – I want so many of these real stories, but I think some people are still hesitant, or guys who are out of the game now don't care anymore.
I think they're less hesitant now. I think there was a hesitancy when this just started and people are like, "What is this? What's going on?" But I think at this point it's all coming out anyway. You know, there's a country song, "It'll All Come Out in the Wash." And I think from my conversations with people, especially now that a lot of players that aren't playing anymore, they don't care. Like, we just had T.O. on and he was great. I mean, he was phenomenal talking about the stuff that went through him. And by the way, this week we got James Harrison coming up. It'll drop on Thursday, a longtime outstanding linebacker in the NFL, defensive player of the year. And oh, by the way, he's going to tell a story about his time with the Patriots that if it had gotten out when he was with the Patriots, they would have cut him on the spot. And, He was like, "I probably shouldn't tell you this, but I'm going to tell you it anyway because it doesn't matter now." It's great about something he did the week before a playoff game that if Bill Belichick had found out about it, he would have been apoplectic. I think that people are happy to share their stories now, and they want people to know what it was like. Like, we had a long conversation with Chris Long, which we did in season two, about the pressure of playing for the Rams when the Rams were bad. Like, the Rams were bad. they had just gone through the greatest show on turf era and all that kind of stuff. And then that's when, you know, when Laurinaitis and Long were there and Robert Quinn, and the defense was really good. The team was terrible. And he was really open and honest about how much that sucked. You know, you people like, hey, go perform on Sunday. Well, if you know you don't have a chance to win, I mean, they went the year they went 1-15. I think it took a special teams touchdown against the Lions, a touchdown pass to a backup tight end, Daniel Fells. That was the only win of the year, you know. And that's, we recorded this one when the Jets were going through their miserable season. He's like, we were worse that year than the Jets were. And nobody knows how much that grates on you, how much that wears you down, how much it drives you crazy. So those are the kind of things I think people really enjoy hearing.
In 2015, they win in Seattle for like the first time in 10 or whatever years. Yeah. And I remember Chris Long, I said to him, hey, if you guys win next week, you'll be 8-8. Because it was like around here, that was like, and he just goes, do we get a parade? Because he knew, yeah, who gives a shit about 8-8. But I was like, I don't know, around here, that's, and of course they lost the game and they went 7-9.
But the thing about Chris, which was great, is like, you know, he went through that miserable stretch with the Rams. And then the back end of his career, he joined one of the most exclusive clubs in the history of football. He won one with the Patriots. And the very next year, he beat the Patriots as a member of the Eagles. I think there are only five people, or maybe even four, in NFL history that have won back-to-back Super Bowls with different teams. The first one to do it was Ken Norton Jr. He won two straight with the Cowboys and then signed with the 49ers, and they won Super Bowl 29. And then Brandon Browner won one with Seattle, and the very next year won one against Seattle with the Patriots. And then Deion Sanders also did it. He won one with the Niners and then won one with the Cowboys, Super Bowls 29 and 30. And then Chris Long and LeGarrette Blount, who were both members of the Patriots in Super Bowl 51, and they beat him in Super Bowl 52. That's the list. It's those five players. So for Chris to go through all that shit, for lack of a better term, he came out on top on the other end of it with an amazing run that really put the sort of the cherry on the sundae of his NFL career.
And what's great for him, his St. Louis legacy, because people knew what he went through, yet you'd see him on the Tuesday nights at the local charity, doing the fundraisers, shaking hands. Like, he did all that stuff. And then karma, baby, he gets those championships. But also, they went to L.A., he and Laurinaitis, who were very popular, they both got cut. So I told Chris, I said, you don't have the stain of going to L.A. You didn't make it there. And then ended up 1,000 times better. Let me ask you this. ESPN, everybody says it's woke center or whatever. Is there anything to that, like a mandate? Like, I see you saying, you're going to say whatever you want. Do they indicate to people like what narratives are or what themes are?
Well, I haven't been there in a while, but I think they're very aware of who their audience is. Now, I don't think there's a mandate. I want to be clear about that. I don't think anyone says these are the things you should talk about, these are the things you don't talk about. But I'm sure there are suggestions, and they understand who their audience is. And, you know, for a long time, ESPN was just a bunch of white dudes. I mean, just the way it was. There are a couple of women and just a bunch of white dudes. And I think they've made a conscious effort to be more diverse. I don't see that as a bad thing. But here's the thing that I would say when people say, oh, I don't want to see politics in sports. I think that's a lie, because you don't want to see what you don't like in politics and sports. Like, the same people like, I don't want to see politics and sports, probably had no problem with the guy, the NASCAR driver who put Trump on his car in 2016, right? They didn't have a problem with other presidents, like, you know, Richard Nixon gave the Washington Redskins, now the Washington football team, a play to run in Super Bowl 7. You know, they didn't have an issue with that. I think people don't like the opposite of their politics being in sports. Like, politics have always been in sports. It's just we talk about it more now. It's a little more of an open discussion. So I think that there's an uncomfortableness where people feel like, hey, this is my escape. And I understand that. And I can relate to that. But also at the end of the day, you need to understand they're not like, I always relate it to this way with athletes. Like, when you're a kid, Martin, you grew up in Wisconsin, right?
Well, St. Louis and Milwaukee. I kind of split
it. Okay, so let's say, where were you in fifth grade?
I was in Milwaukee.
Okay, you're in fifth grade in Milwaukee, and your elementary school is?
St. Catherine.
All right, so you're a fifth grader at St. Catherine in Milwaukee, and you go to the mall, and who was your fifth grade teacher?
I don't remember.
Okay, let's say it's Mrs. Prelwitz, okay? So you're a fifth grader in Milwaukee at St. Catherine's, and you go to the shopping center that you go, and you see Mrs. Prelwitz, your fifth grade teacher, and you're like, hey, you're not supposed to be here. You're in school. You don't exist outside of school. And I think a lot of people look at athletes and have looked at athletes that way for a long time. You're not a person. You're just this guy I watch on a field. And I think there's been an awareness and a discussion more of, okay, these are not just widgets. They're not machines. They're people. And they have real lives away from the sport that they play. And I think it's hard for a lot of fans to sort of put them in a different view of seeing them just as the thing that they want to enjoy during the game. And when they see them outside of that parameter, it kind of freaks them out a little bit. I mean, that's the best way I can describe it.
Let's finish with this, because we have Zoom limits. You have golf. I have places to go. And I feel like you and I could, next time we'll do it with Maker's Mark. We could probably talk for 5 hours.
Done.
Tell some Malcolm stories. That'll take 2 hours alone. By the way, he's been dodging me on the podcast. He works for Edward Jones. He says they won't let him. I said, no.
He's, sure. He's dodging Malcolm, I love you. I don't believe that's the case.
I don't either. Tell me about, just sum up the St. Louis stretch. Were your kids born here? I'm trying to remember.
Yeah.
What was that six-year window like for you?
It was great. Like before I got to St. Louis, I was working in Allentown, Pennsylvania, and the newsroom was a trailer on the back of the studio, and it was a bad trailer on the back of the studio. Like I remember getting there, and the first thing I saw was the building, you know, 1000 Market Street where KSDK was. And I was like, it's a building, like an actual office with an actual studio. St. Louis was great. Both our kids were born there. April 7th, 1992, March 5th, 1995. It will always be a second home for us. And the people in St. Louis, to this day, I still get people that come up and do this. Okay? Which is, if we're on the audio podcast, it's the 5-1 thing.
I used to give KSDK Malcolm did. The one with a different one back in the middle.
I understand that. I can see how that would be the correct response. But like there's a for example, I played golf with Kenny last week. And we played with a producer named John Deaver, who had just flown back from seeing his parents, who now live in Pinehurst, but they grew up in St. Louis. And he said he was going to play with Kenny and me. And they said, please tell him we miss him on Channel 5. I mean, they're not even in St. Louis anymore. They're in Pinehurst, retired. And they asked him, please give him the 5-1. So the folks in St. Louis were so welcoming to me. And so, cause you know, it's kind of a tight knit community, you know, where you went to school is not where you went to college. They want to know what high school you went to, you know, that matters in St. Louis. And as a complete outsider and interloper, I felt very welcomed and part of the St. Louis community. And I'll never forget that. It was a great place to have our kids and have them grow up as youngsters. It was awesome.
Trey, a lot of fun to catch up. Thanks for sharing the stories. And it sounds like we just might see you again soon. I'm just going to leave it a TV tease.
Oh, you're good at that. And I would say that the odds are strong, my friend.
Well, it sure sounds like there'll be some news soon about Trey's next stop at the national level. And just fun to hear his thoughts on the time in St. Louis, going to ESPN as a younger guy, running around with all those big names that you had watched on TV for years. Hope you enjoyed that conversation. We got a lot of great things on tap. Don't always promote them until we've got them recorded. And hey, you never know who's listening, right? Got to be paranoid. But a lot of great segments still to come. And a lot of times we try and go just a little bit off the radar. Not somebody you've heard on St. Louis local radio, you know, 3 times in the last week. That's the goal of the show. So I hope you enjoyed it. The Kill Crunch Conversation presented by Marie Davila Senior Living, also Triad Bank and Appliance Discounters. Encourage you to let them know that you listen to the segments, that you enjoy them. Marie Davila Senior Living, Triad Bank, and The Appliance Discounters on the web, theappliancediscounters.com. I'm Martin Kilcoin. We'll talk to you again soon.